You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
Devin, kick it off for us.
All right. The digital camera is a great invention because it allows us to reminisce instantly.
All right. Nice.
I heard that that's Dimitri Martin's stand-up. He does like those quick little weird one-liners.
Reminisce.
Reminisce instantly.
That looks great. Really, that's amazing. Look at us. We're so happy right now.
Remember that when we did that? That was great.
Remember we took that picture a second ago? It looks so good. Let's take another one.
That's great. Oh, man, that's so true, though. It's like you like take a picture and look at it. You're like, oh, what do you think? Or you take 5, 6, 7 pictures with the digital camera with the phone. Ding, 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 ding. Which one looks good? Go back. Okay, that one's good. That has this good angle. I'll be able to remember this part of this happening. You know, it's including this, or, you know, especially for creating Instagram posts. I'm always right. Like, what do I have in there? Is there stuff in the background? Does my shop look too cluttered? Do I look like a fool?
You know, like a fool.
What angle can I go? You know, or like taking pictures of my work on my dining room table.
Yeah.
So if you guys ever see like my knives and they're just on a wooden surface, that's my dining room table, one that I made myself. And so I'm always like, my daughter and I both work. We have school, you know, do schoolwork and have virtual learning on that table. So it's always covered with stuff. And then honestly, to stay, even before we were working, it was always still covered in stuff. So I'm always like pushing it back, like this, almost like a trash compactor, just like sliding stuff back just out of frame. I'll like take a picture and then I'll be like, oh, I see a little corner of like, you know, something sticking in a notebook. So I'll like, slide that out of the way. I'm gonna capture just the work.
That's why when people see stuff on Instagram or YouTube, people are just picking their best angles.
Right.
They probably see that wooden table and think you're like in a log cabin, like in Alaska. Like, man, he lives such a cool. They just widen out. It's paperwork everywhere and normal, messy kitchen stuff.
White walls with kind of like shitty, you know, like plaster job over the joints and the drywall. And
yeah.
Like,
yeah. I think in the beginning when we were making the Art of Craftsmanship, I was trying to leave out some of the left side of your shop, because that had all the house stuff on the right. On your side of that everyone sees facing you, and that all is work stuff, wood stuff and stone and tools and then you turn, you get like some reality. Like there's like pink girls' bike helmets and like tarps and whatever's in a basement, normal stuff that's in a basement. Right. And it's just like
just storage.
I would see these like neon green like things and like stuff that stood way out. But now I'm like, yeah, it doesn't matter. It's It's just a background. It's a basement.
Right. And, you know, over the years we've been shooting down there, I've kind of gotten stuff in order more or less, and then I get more shit, and then I have to reorganize stuff, and then it gets built up, and then I'm fed up, and then I got to go back and rearrange stuff. Like right now, we have just so many extra tools, like machines and stuff that are in that space that just right. need to go. That's why I'm pumped about making the smithy, so I can get the anvil outside, I can get the forge outside, I can get all that stuff outside that's like just kind of floating around and really hard to move around because it's so heavy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm excited.
Man, to get some room. Cool. You're going to fill it up again quickly anyway, but you know.
Yeah.
You gotta. Yeah.
The like my shop is relatively small. It's like, I don't know, what do you think? It's like 15 by 30 or something.
Yeah.
Just the basement, you know, not even 15. But again, you know, it works well for what I need to do down there. Obviously, like if I had to, I don't know. The one big machine that I'd like to get is a table saw, and every time I think about getting a table saw, I think about the orientation that I would like put it in. I'm like, man, it's just not ideal space for a table saw the way it's set up now. So if that happened, I'd have to like maybe rethink the whole space and do something different, which would be, I don't know, crazy. I don't know if it's worth it. I'm just like, I'll just not get a table saw. No big deal. I mean, I have the little one, like 10-inch on the stand, and that works.
Yeah.
So I can put it at the end of the middle bench, you know, the carpenter's bench, and slide stuff onto it, like as an outfeed. So
that works well.
Which I could do. Yeah. No, it does work well. And if I got a better table saw, I'd probably set it up in that space a little bit more permanently. The end of that table has the big Veritas double handle bench vise.
That's right.
But, you know, if I wanted to set up the table saw at the end, I'd probably want to rearrange that anyway, maybe move that vise to the front, because that's a really nice vise, and if I could get that to the front, and that tabletop needs to be redone.
That came with came with the whole thing, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I got that table for $125 or $150 bucks through, like, Facebook Marketplace or something, and it came with the double screw. The carpenter's vise on the end, which that alone is, I think, worth like $225 or $250 bucks from Veritas.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the Dimitri Martin quote, and I have been shooting little 10 to 30 second clips of my daughter every... Excuse me. I was opening my Guinness. That's what I'm drinking today. Nice. A little 10 to 30 second clips. Like, I didn't want to go crazy. Like, some people, you know, they shoot these long, long videos and you don't know what you're looking at. But if I just shoot small clips every day or every other day, by the end of a year, I'll be able to put them all together and have this really nice, like, 5-minute video or 10-minute video.
Yeah.
And then maybe I'll have it ready for like her first birthday party or something. Then we'll show that, you know, it's like you can watch it, or I'll have it on loop or something. But I thought that would be nice. And, I think I decided that after being in the hospital for a few days with her after she was born, just taking little tiny clips, trying to be present about how much time I like sat there and took pictures of her.
Right.
I didn't want to spend all my time with my newborn baby, like, posing, right? Trying to get the perfect angle, sliding her around the room for good light, you know?
It's just hard to do, you know, because you want to, you want to capture those moments, but you also want to be in the moment, you know? And you, as a photographer, you know, it's like, you're thinking about that, you know, I want to capture these. You know?
Yeah. But I felt like I got some good pictures. I brought the good Nikon and I got some phone stuff, but I remember looking back through my phone and seeing I had a few clips that were like 10 seconds and 20 seconds, and I really liked them. So then I started, okay, I'm going to do that. That's all I need to do. I don't need to worry about taking a million pictures. Just get a few seconds each day when she's doing something different. Try to capture her progression and then reminisce.
Right. I like it. No, that's a great idea. And the one thing that I'm always hesitant about and I need to be more proactive about, my wife is actually pretty good, is taking all that information and all those videos we've done on our phone and photographs and things from over the years and putting them onto a secondary, you know, database.
Right.
Like, she's using a lot of like cloud, you know, storage and stuff. So doing it there, but, you know, occasionally downloading that onto drives and things just to, so we have it, because everything is digital. So it's like we don't have, occasionally, we actually, a few times since our daughter's been born, we've done the like printed book services. You just send, you know, send out like however many you want, you know, 20 or 30 pictures, and then they print out a book. And we've done that a couple times for like grandparents, you know, we'll send them out for Christmas gifts and stuff and great grandparents. So,
right.
But I just have to, I always have to remember to like be more proactive about that, saving that stuff. Cause like right now I have a, you know, like a 5 year old iPhone, like iPhone 5 SE. It, it or something.
Could go at any minute.
Right, exactly. And then it's done, you know. But
I know, same thing. All these little video clips, I just have them on my phone. I got to transfer them. And
right.
It's just a bit of a process. Speaking of a bit of a process, if we want to talk about what we're up to, I guess we can do that first just to kick it off. Because I've been trying to figure out the best way to store our footage, because we finished the kukri knife, brush axe. It wasn't done last week, last podcast, right? We were still
working on it. When did we shoot last? Was it over the weekend? Saturday. We shot on Saturday.
All right. So
that was the last day.
Yep. So just trying to figure out, man, we shot, I think the total gigabytes of storage it took to shoot that, it was, between 300 and 400. Like 350 terabytes, and I think 350 gigabytes. And my new drive that I just bought is only 1 terabyte. I should have got bigger, but I always feel like you have to balance space and also how much you are willing to lose if something goes wrong.
Right.
And I feel like we've talked about this a good bit. I don't know about on here, but yes, you can get a huge 10 terabyte drive that sits there, but if there's an issue, you lose 10 terabytes worth of stuff.
Oh, right.
You know, if I have a bunch of 1 terabyte or 500 gigs, then you only lose a little bit.
Gotcha. I thought you were going like the other way around that, like thinking, you know, is it worth it to buy a giant one to know you have that backup if something goes wrong with what's on like line? But you're going the other way around. You're like, what if something happens to that giant 10 terabyte drive?
Right.
Then you lose all 10 terabytes or whatever.
Right. Yeah. You lose, that makes sense. You use years of work instead of months.
Right.
So I've been battling, and I know there's better ways, and I know there's, I'm also battling with editing the 4K footage, and it's really slow and it's really frustrating too. You know, once I start stacking clips, it bogs down, and I have to cut back what I'm editing. Like at 1080, I could always do full quality, and I could edit in full quality, high def, 1080. But now it doesn't want to do it on 4K, so I have to go at least half quality or quarter quality, and then it slows down. Then you know you can't see your cuts. Like you really have to see the cut smoothly.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's been a mess. So I think I just have to change the format. It's still going to be in 4K. It's just going to be a different format that works a little bit better with PC. And maybe there's a way to, you make a set of files that are lower quality that it pulls it from. So it's not pulling in all that 4K and editing it. It's pulling in, what do they call it? It's like a replacement thing.
Right.
And then when you go to render it, it changes the file destination. So it's like, hey, we're using the low-res copies as you edit. But the second you want to export, we switch over to pulling from those same clips, but the full versions.
Oh, nice.
So I know there's a way of doing that. I guess I haven't put the time into figuring it out, but I know it's a bit of a thing. But we'll see. Our next video, we'll try a different format, MP4, and see how it works. And
yeah,
it's just a little frustrating. But 12 minutes is edited, so
all right,
we're probably a quarter of the way there.
Yeah, I was gonna say this. You know, we put out the video just talking about 2020 and what we're planning is, and that was in 4K. But this will be the first full build video in 4K. So
yeah,
it's exciting. Should be good. Should look good.
Yeah, I mean, it looks awesome. It's already, I've gotten like snobby about that, looking back at old videos now. I'm like, oh, they're so, Yeah, it's not sharp at all. There, it seems like everything's out of focus. Like, oh, this 4K, this new camera looks so good. It's just so it is fun getting it done, and I've been watching some stuff, but it's a little bit slower. But I'll figure it out.
So you are. I know when we were recording, you did some tests with like the MOV and then the other files, the way you're recording it. Are you going to use any of that type of stuff on this video, or is that all just going to be like experiments for the next video?
What do you mean? Use what stuff?
You were like recording. Remember we did a couple tests where you're like,
oh yeah,
recording in MOV and recording in whatever.
MP4 or MOV is right. What I've been debating. I'm sure some people know more about this or yelling at the radio, but it's MOV is less compressed, but it's also, used to be kind of a Mac format. MP4 is more compressed, but better. It works well with PC, but right. The difference is really hard to tell. In my opinion, MP4 might work better. And, I export it anyway at the end of MP4 'cause that's what YouTube says.
Right.
So I don't know the quality change if I shoot all uncompressed MOV and then it's MP4 anyway. I don't know how much different it's doing. We did some comparison tests. We did like the same thing twice on multiple things. And we'll do side by side. And I'll do like a little test export for us and we can see if there's any, like I'll put it on the TV. If I can't tell on the 55 inch, it's... That's it.
Then you'd be fine. Yeah. Well, what, so you're doing everything right now for this video, for the Cougary video in MOV?
Yeah. That's what it was recorded in. So it's in camera. That's what it was recorded in. There's some MP4 stuff that camera, some of it's slow-mo. They, for whatever reason, it's MP4. So.
Gotcha.
But everything's been MOV. Hence why it's so much space. And that's another thing. If I can get the MP4 going, there'll probably be a lot more space. But we'll just do what we have to do because it looks really good. So
yeah,
I'm not going back. Exactly. We'll figure it out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. If it takes up like 32 gigs or 132 gigs every video, then that's what it takes up.
We'll do it. We'll just have to more money be allotted to drives.
Right. Exactly. And that actually is a perfect transition into if you guys want to support us. You can support us on Patreon. And the reason why I say that, actually, it's funny. So, obviously, because we also want support on Patreon, but there was somebody who commented on one of the videos. I can't remember which one it was. It may have been the newest one, the update video, but I'm summarizing, but said something like, you know, you guys said at one point you were going to make videos once a week. What happened with that? You know, it seems like that's what a lot of YouTubers do, but then they don't like make them quick enough and something. And at the end, it was like, you know, I really like your videos and all. Like, so he was trying to say it. It seemed like he wasn't trying to be like too aggressive about it, but it was perfect. I was just like, oh yeah, no, I understand. You know, it's tough. We both have full-time jobs and, you know, we're doing this on the side. I was like, and if you want to help us make more videos, you can go over to support us on Patreon because otherwise you're getting them all for free. So shut it up. I didn't say that. But
if we make enough where neither of us have to work full time, we will make one a week.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you know, it's not vlog style. It's none of that. It's they take a long time. Like,
yeah.
It's just how it is. I edited for 2 days and I got 12 minutes done.
Right. Yeah. Even if we were doing this full time, we still might not have once a week.
Right.
We're not doing 10 or 12 minute videos. We're doing like 40 minute videos.
Right.
You know, long form videos definitely take more time. And the editing style too. It's like you are editing it to a certain level, a certain degree of professionalism that you have. So it's not, like you said, it's not just straight like vlog style. It's not just
get all the
clips and do them quick, you know.
There's talking, but there's not big 5 minute gaps where you're just chatting.
Right.
So it's filled with constant shots. Like I said, this last video was almost 400 gigs, which is days and days of footage. It's just a lot to go through and try to make sure.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I'll edit and I'll just be like, like it's already 35 minutes long. Dustin doesn't even have the handle on. Like I gotta start moving shots along, and then I'll go back and realize I missed a bunch of good shots because I was just skipping over big chunks. Like 10 clips. Like, nah, I won't even look at those. I'm just going to move past it.
It has, like, we have talked about the fact that we need to figure out, or, you know, you need to figure out a better way to get the right amount of clips. Because you, like you said, you'll start recording early in what I'm doing, and then you'll record, you know, for a minute to make sure you get whatever's happening is good. Now, you can do that 3 or 4 times for each process, or a dozen times for each process, but you'll do it, like, throughout the entire process.
Right.
Or at least, you know, used to. So now, with it being so much larger, you know, space taken up, we have to think about, okay, how do we maximize, you know, the shots? That way you don't have, say, 500 shots for the video. You might have 200 shots for the video.
Right. Yeah. It's a weird balance. You always have the feeling of, I want to get total coverage.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the idea, the photographer's ideas, or videographer, whatever you want to call it, is like, you can't overshoot something.
Right.
Yeah. Because the second you go, you know, that's the shot you missed.
Right, exactly.
Like, I didn't get coverage for that. I don't have this angle. Like, what was I thinking? Why don't I have this angle? I need this angle for this edit right here. This would be perfect.
Right. Where the grinder belt catches the blade and it swings around and sticks in my stomach, you know, I'm like, bleeding out.
Right. What was I doing?
You're like, that's YouTube gold.
YouTuber dies on camera. You won't believe how bad he dies.
Worst mistake ever.
He dies so bad. Amazing death. And it's just you with a cut finger.
Yeah, right. But dun, dun, dun.
I'm okay, guys.
So you started out kind of talking about what we're working on. Do you want to talk about the other thing that you've been interested in recently? I know we mentioned it on the last podcast.
Oh, yeah, I guess I'm not working on it. I'm just doing that thing where you get into something new and then you, like, buy the books and you watch all the YouTube videos. Yeah, I've just been really interested in timber framing, especially in talking to Justin Dietrich last week, too, and knowing he does that stuff. I got to go back and look at his stuff and his... I know he had, like, a class online. Didn't he do a maker thing?
Yeah, he was part of the maker camp this year, the virtual maker camp.
Right.
So he led a you know, led one of the online live sessions for timber framing.
Does that live anywhere, that video?
Probably. It's probably on the Maker Camp site. The location is Blackthorn Resort. That's the company that hosts it is the Blackthorn Resort up in New York. So it might be on their website.
Right. Okay. But,
he just put out a video on timber framing his a mailbox holder thing. Did you see that? Justin did?
No.
Yeah. He's doing he did a timber frame mailbox thing did like some Shishugiban charring at the bottom so it could sit underground.
Oh, I did see the charring video. That was cool.
Yeah.
I think we need to do a video going up there and learning to timber frame Marta Crescent Chip and we'll
head out to Illinois.
Yeah, pay for our education.
Yeah, right. On the AOC credit card.
That's right. But yeah, so I got a great book. I guess I don't have to. Yeah, I'll recommend it this week. I'll just use that as a recommendation. I'll hold that to the end. Oh, a big teaser there, folks. I've just been watching all the videos. It seems to make sense. We'll see if I get into it. I haven't done any yet, so I'm still at that point where I'm like looking at tools and how much I'm going to invest in it. Right? You always hear about these are the best tools, but you're like, do I really want to spend $160 on a chisel? Like,
right?
Can I get one for half that? Is it half quality? Like, is the tool? You get to that point where it's so poor that you struggle to learn with it.
Right.
It makes the process so much harder because you don't have the right tool. So I'm trying to figure out a balance. If there's any way I can, and obviously I'll be looking at antique malls and I'll be looking around for all these things that I need, but it just seems like such a great thing to do and something you can do in your shop. And the majority of it you do inside, you know, you're not spending weeks and weeks, at least to get the frame up.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but you do all that in your shop. You take the time and you lay out everything and you cut all your joints and mortise and tenon. And then you kind of put it up like Lego in a day with a bunch of friends and family. It seems like such a cool thing. And hopefully one day I need like a workshop or I'd like to have a place to edit and record these podcasts. And I'd love to do like a 12 by 16 timber frame hut, shed, cabin.
But yeah, it'd be sweet. Have like the loft area for all the clean stuff. And down below, you just have your shop to do more timber framing. Or whatever else you want to do. You know, just like having a shop. Like once you have a house and a property, then there's always something to do. At least I feel that way. You know, like there's either something to do in the shop or you have to then hire out to have someone else do it. Like, you know, if you got to fit a new door or put in like a new framework around a window or do some trim in your house or whatever, you know, there's always something. So having those basic tools like chop saw, you know, circular saw, a workbench with a vise, you know, and then a few tools, that's kind of the basis, you know, a couple sanders or whatnot. But
right.
I think everybody needs, I feel like I wouldn't, you know, I don't know, my mentality is automatically just to do that stuff myself. So you can't do that if you don't have. And, you know, I think that we're all that same way, raised that way by our dad, who was like, oh, okay, what do we need to do? Let's figure out how we're going to do it ourselves. You know, what do we need to buy? What do we need to get? You know, and our dad had all the background, the history of being, you know, a contractor working for the city and doing all sorts of different stuff. And then just his, you know, just a lifetime of making stuff on his own that, you know, we've kind of gleaned from him over the years. And so we have that, I think, that same mindset. It's like, okay, we need to get it done. Let's get it done. And we all have the maker mindset, you know, get to work, keep working. How do we work more efficiently, work together as a team?
Yeah,
whether that's like BB gun battles in the woods or that's you know, putting down a floor,
right? So I feel like it's something if I can learn and do, there will never be a lack of projects. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I mean, if you get one thing up, then you're probably going to want to make an attachment. Or definitely, if you have one thing up, there will be friends and family who go, "That's awesome! Can we please do it?"
Yeah, right.
So I know if I got one up, everyone would probably want one.
Yeah, and once you build the main structure, then you know, you don't want to have all of your furniture inside just be prefab or something. So then, you know, maybe build a timber frame table,
right?
Timber frame couch and some chairs and like your shelving. And you know, once you get that mindset of like, I can make mortises and tenons and like lap joints and things to put things together and they'll hold with some pegs and some dowels.
Right.
Like maybe some wood glue to reinforce it, but it doesn't need it really.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think it like, it's like you're seeing out of the crystal glass, you know, it's like, oh, cool. All this stuff can just work that way. And then you start noticing it in everything around you. Anytime you go into an old barn, you're like, oh, cool.
That's cool. It definitely takes skill and forethought, but I feel like normal stick framing, the way houses are made now, it's the same thing. There's a lot of measurements and ideas and things you need to know before tackling it.
Yeah.
Just like timber framing. And you just make such a better product and it'll last longer than any of us need it to.
Right, yeah. I like that. Yeah. It'll last longer than we need it to.
Right. Yeah, it won't blow down. If there's a tornado, we'll probably run out to that thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because that thing ain't coming down. And it's cool that a lot of times you do it, you don't have to wait for, if you were lucky enough to, you know, mill your own wood, you don't have to wait for anything to dry and, you know, lumber that big is would take forever to dry all the way through.
Right.
But you cut it and you can put it up work on it while it's green, and certain woods will be a little bit softer to work with, and you just there will be some warping and stuff apparently, but it just goes with it, and then that's just how you do it. So I'm excited. I'm getting to that.
I think it'd be good. Uh-oh. Looks like something happened to Devin's sound. We might have lost him for a minute. Well, on that note, I will talk to you guys about what I have been up to. So we talked about the kookery, so that we finished up the kookery on on Saturday. So I've been like, oh no, is that me? Hold on, guys. If you can still hear me, I appreciate it. If you can't hear me, then We'll see where we're going. No, I'm connected. Okay. Cass hasn't seen Devin. Looks like you've been disconnected from the internet. Please check your connection and reload this page. Sorry, guys. If you can hear me, I'm glad that you can hear me, and I'm going to keep on going, and we'll see if Devin is here. I'm gonna stop recording, and I might have to come back to you guys. All right. All right, we're back.
We're back.
Not exactly sure what happened there. It looks like my internet service just died completely. Like, I have AT&T, and I run from my hotspot on my phone because we don't actually have internet here at my house. My wife and I just use our phone hotspots for, you know, random TV and stuff, and then just surf the internet with that. But yeah, it just stopped. It's still my phone. It says no service. Like, AT&T just died.
Well,
I don't know.
It's a hotspot for you.
Fortunately, we do have a separate hotspot here at the house. So I joined onto that, and we're back to recording.
We are back.
you were finishing up your thought about timber framing and.
Yeah, so I think what I said after that point was, if I give it up in a month or two, you'll know.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Hey, remember the time you were talking about timber framing? You're like, no. So, you know, everyone keep me honest. Dustin, keep me honest.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you got the tools yet? What do you got? Come on, let's try something. Have you done a project?
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the fun things I think about timber framing, and I've done the bare minimum of timber framing, but just enough to, like, whet my interest. But I think the fun thing about what I see is that it's, like, almost like you said, like giant Legos or like a puzzle, right? So it's like, okay, this piece here needs to have this part removed, and then this piece here has to have this part removed, or like this is a mortise and this is a tendon. You just kind of draw it out, and because it's on such a large scale, your amount of slop, you know, or tolerances are really high, right? Or really low, or whatever it is. Like, you can make a mistake by a kerf of a saw blade, and it's not going to matter. Now, obviously, if you can do it really accurate, really clean, you know, that's why using chisels, marking your lines with a nice, you know, like a marking knife, hint, hint, might be a new video coming out. you know, then you work up to those lines, chisel out all your stuff, and then you, like, chisel out the bulk of it, and then work to that line slowly, so that way you can get pretty accurate, but...
Right. I mean, as long as you do it right and go by the plans, and don't... your measurements aren't way off. I mean, everything does have to sync up nice and well and fit, but there's ways of testing that beforehand before you're out all the way out where you want to lay it down.
Right. Yeah.
And, but no, so that should be fun. So that's what I'm up to. Dustin, nice. What do you got?
Well, I have, I've been doing a few different things. One, obviously we finished the kukri. So that was fun. We were able to get that nice handle on that and get that all finished up. And, you know, showed it off to a few friends and showed it off to my students. Like, look at this cool thing I made. But that's pretty cool. So a few things I've been doing this week. There's a couple. I started a painting. I started what was to be two paintings last year when I transitioned into virtual learning. So March 13th or 14th or whatever it was, the last day that I taught last year, started teaching virtual every day from then on, and then realized I had kind of this downtime sitting around waiting for students to check in, you know, being available for students, kind of like office hours, but not actually teaching. Yeah. And so I just pulled out, I had this idea to make these two kind of sister paintings, one really dark painting and one really light painting, both landscapes, both out of my head. But you know, one really dark kind of nighttime and one daytime, full bright, you know, and lots of variations of white and cream and, you know, light. So I did the first one back when I started that back in maybe April or so of last year, and then have been kind of, I still have that one. It's, to me, it's not completely finished yet. It looks finished, but there's still things I want to work on it. So I kind of was thinking about working on that a little bit more, but then I thought, you know, I should start the second painting. So then I can kind of see this relationship between the two paintings. So I started that. I got a decent amount. I think that's probably, what size is it? Maybe 18 by, not 18, maybe 15 by 30, 15 by 25, something like that. So it's kind of a narrow, tall painting. But I started that and got some good progress done. I posted some pictures on Instagram and Facebook of that, the start. And then I worked, I think, for another like 4 or 5 hours after that. So just like kind of building it up, I kind of had an idea of what I wanted to do for the landscape. So just kind of start by laying in little general areas of paint to see how it works, and then start putting in, you know, bigger areas of paint and kind of, and I work predominantly in with a palette knife. So I use a, you know, a mixing tool that's a big, you know, flat metal thing that I can mix with and then also apply the paint with. So I really like that because it keeps my marks a little bit more abstract and a little bit more unpredictable. So things happen with the marks that are exciting, especially in landscape. You know, everybody knows Bob Ross, and over the years, you know, Bob Ross would paint with a palette knife and like, okay, we'll just take this little part of white and just drag it down, right? And then you get this like scraped surface, and that can be barn wood, or it can be bark, or it can be a rock. You know, there's all sorts of ways that natural obscurity that happens when you scrape paint over the surface, that I love that feeling of that, you know, it has a life of its own. So I started that painting, which is cool. Let's see what else. My cousin-in-law reached out to my wife and I a while back, maybe a month or so ago, with an idea for a logo. He's actually doing a, funny enough. So he's doing a paddleboard out of wood.
Nice.
And so he reached back out to me and was like, you know, wondering how that logo is going. I've got most of the wood, and the next step in the process is basically to print out on parchment, apparently, your logo, and you put it where you want it on the wood, and then you fiberglass over it. And it basically like cleans the, you know, you can't see the parchment paper and it just looks like the logo. So he's to the point where he wants to get ready to get that logo on. So I was chatting with him, and my wife and I were working up a few different versions of that and sending him his different options. And then, you know, I was like, oh, you should check out work by Justin Dietrich, because he's working on a paddleboard. You know, I was like, he has like a buddy of mine from, you know, social media, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, so I sent him the link, and then he went and looked at it. He was like, oh, that's so funny. He's like, I watched all those videos from him so far. You know, so he's already been watching Justin's like videos on the paddleboard, which again is another reason why Justin needs to get back on that and finish that up. And I know that Justin wanted to do that just so he can get out on the water. But yeah, so that's kind of fun. It's kind of fun doing like design work that way, coming up with a logo, something that works, something that, you know, there's a completely different mindset when you're coming up with a logo as opposed to coming up with a, or just creating fine art. Because a logo has to be simple and recognizable all the time, right? That's the most simple logos, the ones that everyone remembers, like UPS or Nike or, you know, the Adidas, a flower, whatever. You know, these are really simple, right? Really simple shapes that are very recognizable from anywhere.
Yeah, I think a logo and like a theme tune musically. Mm-hmm. A logo you want to be able to draw in your notebook, and a tune you want to be able to hum and whistle and get that stuck in your head.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so we kind of played with that, and he had an idea which we played on, and we gave him a few other ideas, which is funny enough because my wife was not a huge fan of his original idea, so she was like taking his concept behind the idea and then making a few different versions of it that she thought would work better, and kept like sending over versions of that. And he was like, yeah, I like it, but it's not really the angle I was going for, not the direction I wanted to go for. So,
right.
But I had done a basic version of what he wanted first in a way that we thought worked a little bit better. Which is it's the silhouette of a bird, like an eagle from above or from below, either one, you know, so like wings straight out flying, like gliding. And then the head, well, I don't know if I should say it because somebody might steal it, but whatever. It's the bird, but then different elements of the profile represent the four elements. So fire, earth, wind, and water, and different like parts of it. So that, you know, is the logo. And he had a certain way that he had drawn it from what he had in his mind, which to me actually related a little bit back to like Native American art. So a little bit more simplified in symbols of what things were, like symbols of what clouds were, symbols of, you know, water, you know. And so he had this kind of idea, which we both kind of liked, but it worked with some like profile, some things on the inside, some things on the outside, like silhouettes. And it just didn't seem like it could work as a logo. So we're playing around with it. So we got him one that he was really pleased with. So working on getting that ready and sent over to him. So When he puts that out, I'll repost it and show everybody what the logo is on his board. It'd be awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, and then other than that, you know, I just working on the companionway for my buddy Jim, who joined us on the live stream that one day. finished that up for him and used my my inner tubes for giant rubber band clamps in the shop. It's funny because those inner tubes are hanging up in the rafters like everything else in the shop, and often we'll like walk underneath or bump them or whatever. And I think I've used them one or two other times, but today I was like, oh, how am I going to clamp this weird shape? And I was like, oh, the inner tubes, yes. Grabbed them, trimmed them down, stretched them. It worked perfectly. It was exactly what I wanted it to do.
Nice.
And other than that, just collecting materials for the smithy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting. My dad just got some free OSB from a buddy of his. So we've got 3 full sheets, 4x8 sheets of OSB, as well as a couple other like partial sheets. So that should be enough for like the main roof underlayment or whatever.
Yeah. And I got the okay from the in-laws to go pick up the aluminum sheeting, roofing siding.
Yeah.
So we'll probably go up there soon, and I guess we'll shoot the intro up there and,
Yeah, plan it out. So I've got everything's like it's supposed to snow again here tonight into tomorrow morning, anywhere between 2 and 5 inches I saw. So went out this afternoon and covered up the wood and actually used some drop cloth, like painter's drop cloth, and put it over everything, or you know, plastic drop cloth. And then I got like 4 or 5 C clamps, and since it's all the wood, I have it leaning up against some sawhorses, but outside. And so I just like covered it all and just C-clamped the edges. So nice that little package outside right now, all wrapped up, ready for the snow.
Oh man, I didn't even know it was supposed to snow tomorrow.
I didn't either. One of my students said it today, kind of like in a comment, and then we're getting snow and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, snow. Sure enough, more snow. It's great. I love it.
my wife hates it.
Right, of course.
But she has to go to she has to leave, you know, 5:30 to go to the hospital. So
right.
The roads around here are never good. They're kind of back roads, so she's always slipping and sliding. We got the 4-wheel drive, though, so it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. I've been, you know, busy doing a bunch of little things. You know, since whenever we finish up a video, I have all this free time. I re-oiled the hickory bow. I took my Osage bow downstairs, my one that I haven't finished yet, because it had these, like, lateral cracks in it. I'll have to ask our guest next week what he thinks about them.
Yeah, we can actually talk about that, what happened. This is why we're just talking in general terms this week, because we did have a guest plan.
Yep.
Dust, if you want to talk about him.
So I reached out to one of my bow-making idols, Clay Hayes. If you guys are, you know, if you've done any bow making or if you've searched any bow making online, I'm sure you've run into Clay. He is an awesome bow maker, has a YouTube channel called Clay Hayes, and he's got a website, Twisted Stave. He teaches classes, does all sorts of awesome stuff. So I reached out to him, and we were going to have him on the podcast. So we were ready to record, had everything going. I've got all my notes here for all the questions I was going to ask him. And so we're talking back and forth through DM on Instagram, getting ready. We send him the link, and then he sends me back a message saying that like it's his browser isn't supporting the cast program, which is what we use. So apparently, which we didn't really know, but maybe someone said it at some point, but you need to have Google Chrome to use GAS, use Cast.
Cast.
So, so he had to download that, and it was going to take some time. So we had to postpone, but at the last minute, we're like, okay, we'll postpone until next week. So if you guys have any questions for Clay, I'll put out a comment and thing on Instagram and Facebook. Anybody who out there who's interested in bow making, any questions that you have about bow making, definitely post them, put them up, you know, answer in comments or, in responses. And I will ask him, cause he is a bow making guru, and, he's done lots and lots of bows, so I'm excited to have him on. And we shall see. We shall see. It should work fine. Unfortunately, he is next week free, so we'll get him next week.
Another person hampered by their hotspot internet. Apparently that's what he's working with as well.
Right, exactly. I know, I was like, amateur, and then it's like straight halfway through our podcast. No, I know, it was like when he said that, he texted, he said he's, you know, he's working off his phone of his hotspot, and I was like, oh man, me too.
Right.
But yeah, and it just died in the middle. I know, I was thinking that when it happened. I was like, yeah, good thing we don't have Clay on now, because that would have been a shit show. But yeah, fortunately, we figured out the issue and we're able to get back up and going. Yeah, so so yeah, fun things. I mean, you know, it's good to have some time in the shop, just to kind of putz around and clean up a little bit and do a few different things. Because that our heat has been kind of off and on, working well and not working well some days, and it was not working well for about 2.5 days in a row over the last couple of days. And of course, those are like some of the coldest days we've had here in Maryland, like in the 20s.
Yeah.
So it was pretty chilly in our house, and I reached out to our the company that takes care of our furnace and stuff, and we have a plan with them. So they came out and assessed it, and that was like 2 days ago. And the guy's like, okay, it looks like everything's working fine, but you're not getting like the water pumping through correctly or whatever. So he said what he thought it was possibly a bubble in the, like an air bubble in the line. So we have baseboard heating. So, you know, it's a water heated furnace, which then sends water through all the baseboards, which is what warms up and, you know, warms up the house. Yeah, so I'll have to send somebody out. So he was like, okay, they, you know, we have plumbers. He said he's not really a plumber, so he had to send out a plumber to work on it. And this was probably 2:00, 2:15 in the afternoon on Monday. So kind of waited around for a call, heard nothing by, you know, Monday night, and then Tuesday I called, and they're like, okay, yeah, no problem. We'll, you know, we'll reach back out. We'll put in 2 tickets, so that way someone reaches out and calls you. And then still no call yesterday. So I called back again today. Or actually, no. Somebody called me from the place, but I was teaching, so I called them back. And they should be out tomorrow morning at 9. But fortunately, our system's kind of kicked itself back into gear, and it's working today. So
for now.
But yeah, either way, they're just going to bleed and you know, get the air out of the system. So seems like that should be the problem.
The dreaded, it, you know, we put it in the system, there's a ticket. Like, oh, okay.
Actually, the woman who I called, when I called and talked to the woman, she was actually really good. She was like, well, she's, I was, you know, because I told her, I was like, you know, when the guy came yesterday, the technician, he told me he had put something in with the plumbers, so that way they would know to call me. And she's like, well, I'll just put in another one because, you know, two tickets in the system can't hurt. And I was like, oh yeah, I hear that. So like, we'll get two in there for you. I was like, ah, it's great.
You know, well, one's kind of useless, so, you know, two won't make any difference.
Yeah, right.
You're screwed either way, buddy.
Just gonna have to deal with the cold.
I hope you like jogging.
Yeah, right. Either way, it would be fine. We have an electric oven, so just turn on the oven and open the oven door. So that warms up the kitchen, and then we have a little space heater.
I thought you were supposed to get your space heaters.
Yeah, no, yeah. We do. We have the one space heater, that just lives in the living room. And but they pull so much energy in our house. The electricity in our house is so like wishy-washy that when we put it. I mean, we keep it on a surge protector, but when it's not plugged into like the one main outlet, like the outlets, the circuits are weird in the house. So we can run it in the living room, but if we run it in either the bedrooms, like it just trips circuits and stuff. So.
Where we really need it.
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, put like 3 or 4 extra blankets on each of the beds and you know, it stays, it's not like crazy cold in our house, even when the heat's down, because it's a small house. So, you know, it dropped down to maybe 55 or something. So,
ooh.
Which is cold, but it's not. You know, when you're under 4 blankets, it's
man, stupid. That's
it's cold.
That's old world temperatures,
right? You got to put the drapes around our bed and
you know, right. You got to get the hot water bottles.
Put some rugs up on the walls to insulate the room.
Jeez,
yeah, coals inside of the like. Foot tins to put under
the bed. My wife would lose her shit.
You better get somebody out of here right now.
She'd be starting a fire in the bedroom. I don't care.
Let the landlord deal with it.
She's got an axe. Look out. She's just chopping kindling. Yeah, get warm twice, hon. Shut up.
Well, you guys have the fire.
We do have the wood stove.
Wood stove.
So that's really nice.
Although that is kind of like out on the, you know, I guess that works fine, right?
It's good, but it doesn't really get to the bedrooms. It'll warm the sun porch and the living room,
right?
And almost to the kitchen up. So I mean, at least we'd have an area, or we'd have something, core to our place where we'd have some warmth. Exactly. That's really what you need, just a nice wood stove. But
yeah,
that's a whole thing.
We'll see.
Projects for the next homes with with timber framing and wood stoves and all the all the good stuff.
I would love, man. We grew up different. All of our houses, I think, we grew up in all had either wood stoves or fireplaces. And it's just something so nice about that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think even like we grew up had the trailer on the farm first, and the farmhouse had the fireplace, and then we moved up to Westminster, and that had the wood stove and each of those places. And I love a wood stove. I love a fireplace too, but there's something kind of cool about a wood stove, just like that chunk of steel or whatever in the corner, and it, keep the fire going, have a little stone hearth, and then your little firewood stack there or whatever. We'll see. I'd love to have something like that.
Yeah.
Some point we'll see when we have a new shop at a new house and all sorts of new stuff. And then we'll get all the trolls be like, I used to like it when you guys were back in that little shop down the basement.
With all your shitty tools and your shitty house.
Back when you were relatable.
Yeah, back when you were relatable and poor. Now look at you.
I wanted to say I just opened up my second beer. I'm drinking a Sam Adams Wicked Hazy Juicy New England IPA. Brand new. I feel like they just put it out. 6.8% alcohol by volume.
Take it easy.
35 IBUs, so it's pretty, it's not super hoppy. But, I was at the liquor store the other day buying some beer, and I picked up a 12 pack of the New Belgium, the Voodoo Ranger mix pack, which we enjoyed recently. And and then I saw this. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Sam Adams, they do like little small batch runs nowadays, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
So yeah,
it's good. Yeah, it's good stuff. I was looking actually. There's a couple local Maryland brewers, and I know a guy who knows some of the brewers. Maybe we'll get them on. That'd be great to hear all about that. And there's actually one place that in their sampling room, or next to their little bar that they have at the brewery, they have axe throwing.
Nice. Yeah.
So I thought maybe we could talk to them or hook them up with an axe or something to try to collaborate. That'd be sweet. We need an Art of Craftsmanship beer as well.
That'd be awesome. Sponsored by the Art of Craftsmanship beer from Heavy Seas Brewing.
Yeah.
That'd be sweet. Speaking of axe throwing, I know I mentioned this to you. Our buddy Sean from Crafting Life I Want wanted to do a collaboration, kind of video collaboration with us, where we each make a modified axe head into a throwing axe head. So basically taking like a full-size axe head, which either it's got a chip out of it, or something that needs to be modify it down to the axe throwing league standards for weight. Build them separately on our own videos, and then have a little throw, axe throwing throw off at the end of the video. So look for that in the nearish future. That should happen sometime in the next couple months or so. That'll be a fun video to do. But yeah, axe throwing. We'll get back to that. Drinking beers and axes, man. That's some of the biggest comments we've had on any of our videos. I still get it. It's basically just that. People still say
that. Yeah.
Drinking beers and throwing axes. You can't go wrong. That same exact comment. We've heard that 50 times.
It's great.
Every time I'm like, yeah, you're right. It's awesome.
Right. And it's either people are positive or slightly negative about it, but I mean,
right, yeah, exactly.
That's now, I mean, I guess we were doing it before it was cool. Now there's so many bars with that, or that's like a thing now,
right?
All those breweries and stuff that, or not breweries, but all those places that axe throwing, it's always involved with booze.
I mean that wasn't like a new thing when we did that video. I mean, that was already pretty big. I mean, it's even bigger now, but it was big at the time. All the axe throwing places, they had already gotten huge. It already had exploded all over the place. And I know. I was always surprised. I'm like, really? So many people are, you know, some people are negative about it. Some people are surprised. Like, you guys ever seen anything? Like, there's viral videos of like Jason Momoa drinking a Guinness and throwing axes, you know, like at those bars. Like, I know I've seen them because my wife has shown them to me because she's like, ooh, look, Jason Momoa.
Whatever, I can drink Guinness and throw axes.
Yeah,
too.
Right. Yeah,
might be. I'm gonna make a video about it. Yeah,
I'm 6'6", even though, you know, I'm pretty tall. I've got broad shoulders and I've got muscles like him. They're just hidden. They're just under there now.
Under some stuffing.
Under some stuffing, right? Exactly.
You want to stay warm tonight? It's 55 degrees in this house.
What's her name? What's his wife's name? Marie DeSalle.
Yeah.
You think she's warm tonight? No.
Yeah.
And my wife's like, oh, I'm sure she's warm tonight.
I think
Lisa Bonet.
Yeah. She's all right, but he could do better. If that's his thing, if he had a crush on her, he had a crush on her when he was young.
Right, when she was in like the Cosby Show.
A
different world or whatever.
She's a beautiful woman, but he could get anybody. I don't know. She's a lot older than him, isn't she?
Yeah, a lot older. I mean, I think, you know, he was a kid when she was on that show. So I think he's like in his 30s or something, and she's in her 50s.
Dang.
Yeah, what are you going to do? They got two kids together, and... you know, they're happy.
Well, good for her.
Good for them.
All right. Well, recommendations.
Yeah.
Do we have? We're going to have to change. I'm going to change my recommendation. Actually, no, I'm going to use it. I said I would.
Right.
I'll start. It's the book I talked about earlier is Learn to Timber Frame by Will Beamer.
All right.
It's pretty simple. I saw some YouTube videos and some guys were like, oh, I checked this book out. It's good. It's nice. And I've really liked it. It goes into it. And at the end of the book, it has plans for a, like I said, 12x16 structure.
Nice.
Step by step goes into everything you need. So I loved it. I finished it. And now I'm going back through and I'll try and read it again.
Nice, dang. You are serious. Nice.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, if you have any more talk about that, but my recommendation, I have actually two recommendations. So your book inspired me. So the first recommendation that is the book The Knife Steel Nerds by Laren Thomas. It's called Knife Engineering. His website's called Knife Steel Nerds. But Laren Thomas is the author. And I want to say that when I got it and what I've seen, it's pretty hefty. Like, it's a big book. You know, it's multiple hundred of pages and lots of, like, technical pictures and lots of numbers and all these graphs and stuff. And just flipping through, it seemed pretty daunting. But then once I started reading it, the way he writes is very... very like down to earth and intuitive, and he's talking about stuff and then he'll relate something and be like, okay, this is something you want to remember, these initial basics things, so that way when I talk about them later you understand. And it's written so well and so easy to read, you know. I was like, man, this is a, because it's about knife heat treating and all the engineering, so
mm-hmm.
you know, edge retention and you know, like all the metallurgy and different steels and edge geometry and all this stuff that's very technical.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he writes is very, very approachable. So if anybody's interested in that book, and I would say go ahead and get it. Now, I haven't finished it yet, but I definitely got a couple chapters in and I realized that it's a pretty easy read and it's very captivating. So that is Knife Engineering by Laren Thomas. And my other recommendation is... on Instagram is Woodsman's Finest. Let's see if I can find it. My internet is gone, even though I have Wi-Fi. No, I can't find it. Well, so it's Woodsman's Finest. It's Woodsman's, so WODSMANS _finest, Woodsman's Finest. And he does all sorts of I think what he's been posting a lot of recently is spoon carving, and that's one of those things that I've just always loved. And I've done some spoons, and I think ever since I watched the Alone in the Wilderness with Dick Prenicky, you know, he carves out a spoon. I think one of the first or second times I saw that, I just went out into the woods and cut a chunk of pine tree that was down and made a spoon, which we still use almost weekly because it's like a ladle, which we call our batter spoon.
That's a video we need, I guess.
Yeah.
What's Andy Rawls? He's got one of his first ones. He did a spoon from 100-year-old something, right?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, what we do is we say carving a spoon from a 200-year-old tree.
Yeah. We're like from a 1,000-year-old tree.
Yeah. From a rock.
Yeah, right. What's that other guy? I can't remember that guy's name. Whatever. But
from petrified forest wood.
That's one of those.
That's a great video. That'd be a nice. We're always trying to figure out how we can spread out a little bit wider and pull other people in and do different types of projects. That's why we try not to stick to one thing. And the one thing is boring, you know.
Right. Yeah, boring.
I think every time we switch a little bit, every time we move 15 degrees to the right or left, I think you and I both get excited. We're like, this is going to be cool. This is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And like you said, that it just expands the things that we can do. Mm-hmm. You know, so, 'cause I mean, like, we're fairly limited to what we can do just with the tools that I have and my knowledge of what things I can make. So that's why we've like done knife making and bow making and some woodworking and some metalworking. And, you know, as I learn new things and as I get new tools, we do new videos. Spoon carving is something that I've done off and on. I've probably made about a dozen spoons and spatulas over the last maybe 8 or 9 years.
Right. If it's a spoon at the end of it, you've done it right.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You cannot the people will still maybe give you shit for not using this tool or that tool, but it's like, it's a spoon. Like, what do you want?
Right. Right. It turned out right. You know, it's going to scoop and hold liquid or whatever.
Yeah. What's the problem here?
Yeah. I have we have a spatula that I made because I made a spoon for somebody. And then when you make a spoon, if you're cutting it out of a big like chunk of wood, you have what's left over after you cut that spoon shape out of wood, almost like a ladle shape. You have a spatula shape already there.
Nice.
You have what's left on the bottom plus this kind of funky shape handle, which is just the negative shape of what you cut out from the other thing. So often when I make a spoon, I'll make a spatula along with it, and then I'll give them like together as gifts. So it's like these two things go together, made out of the same piece of wood.
Carving a kitchen set.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go.
Yeah, that'd be cool. A spoon, spatula. Yeah. And then, we have...
from a 1,000-year-old tree.
Right. I have some tools and, you know. And the nice thing that I like about wood carving, about spoon carving, it's like super approachable, too. It's, you just kind of take a whatever chunk of wood, kind of cut it kind of flat on top, draw the above profile of your spoon, mm-hmm. and then, you know, or even like the side, you kind of figure out what you want. Usually you carve the bowl first while you still have the big chunk, so you have a lot of wood to clamp in the vise, and then you just shape the outside.
I mean, you could even do a whole knife, spoon, and fork kind of set.
I could do that. Yeah.
Because really, if you needed to kind of cut something, it would work, a wooden knife,
right?
You know,
and definitely, like, I mean, people use wooden knives for cutting up salad stuff, and they use them for obviously their wooden butter knives and cheese knives and things like that too. So
that'd be cool.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I like it. I like the idea of doing that. But I like the spoon spatula. Maybe we take like one chunk of wood and then see how many things we can make. How many like kitchen utensils we can make out of that one chunk of wood?
Right. You get a plate.
Cool. Yeah. Right. Cheese board, just chop it up and then make a cutting board out of it. Yeah, that's fun stuff. But
yeah,
so Woodsman's Finest, he does some really beautiful wood carving, really beautiful spoons, and some like some other woodworking stuff. So check him out on Instagram.
Cool.
All right, well, I don't have to talk about Patreon because we talked about it in the middle of the show. But you guys can support us on Patreon. You can follow us over on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship. And then obviously we would love for you all to go to YouTube and check out our videos, check out our channel, follow along, learn something new, you know, make your next project or your first project.
Next first project.
And then send us some information, either DM or you know, tag us on Instagram, send me an email. I'd love to see some stuff. I actually just got a guy who sent over a fire pit that he made out of the barrel fire pit video.
Nice.
He sent an email and sent some pictures, and it's great. It looked super awesome, and it's awesome. So it was great to see it, and it was great to just have a conversation with somebody, you know, personally through email. So if you guys are ever inspired by stuff we do, you please reach out to us. And Devin, you got a new Instagram handle too, don't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it hidden.
Oh, okay, never mind then. We won't talk about it. Keep it secret. Keep it safe.
Keep it safe. No, yeah, I just changed my name to The Art of Camera Guy. Just because The Art of Camera Guy. My other name was just, I don't know if people knew who I was, if I was trying to talk to them. Not that it mattered, but so I figured, why not? I mean, I don't know if I'll post anything. It's just going to add to whatever The Art of Craftsmanship's doing. Yep. Maybe some more behind-the-scenes stuff, maybe technical gear stuff and editing, that side of stuff. I don't know. Maybe we'll see.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Should be good. I know. I was excited when I saw that. I sent you a DM. I was like, whoa, what did you change your name? That's awesome. I love it.
I was like, what is this? What's this message? I don't think I've ever had a DM. I'm new.
Yeah, that's one of the things. When you look under your DMs, you'll see at the top it'll say there are a few requests, but they don't pop up automatically. So someone, not depending on your settings, people can't just send you a straight DM. They'll like send you a DM, and then you have to accept that they want to DM with you.
Okay, you accept the conversation, and then
keep going.
Right. Okay.
For a long time I didn't realize that. So then once I realized that, there were like 50 people who were trying to send me messages, and I was like, accept, went through. So yeah, that's a little tip for you. See those message requests, because people want to talk to you.
I guess.
Yeah. All right. Cool. All right. Well, if you guys are interested, definitely watch for us on Instagram. I'm going to post some questions, and if you have any questions or anything you're concerned about, or you're working on a bow and you need some help, let me know in the comments. Let me know in the responses, and I will be sure to ask those questions to Clay Hayes next week on our podcast.
Yeah, if you want to learn from Master Boyer.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, also, one more thing I want to say. I've been thinking of doing a couple stingers and tags and stuff for the podcast, like adding like sounds and the questions now, blah, blah, blah. But I was also listening to the Ricky Gervais podcast, which is an old classic, which I love. And they made it into an HBO series and all that. But Ricky just always did his own. They're like, "Oh, do the thing," and he would do it every time, like differently. So whatever the segment was, he'd come up with a new like top recommendations. like you and I can just take him over and do it that way. I thought that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. Send your DMs.
Send DMs.
Nice. I like it. Cool. Yeah, I like how we always like we're thinking of something. We're like, maybe we'll try this, and then we see someone we love do something different. We're like, we don't need to do that. That's stupid. We'll just do it our way. We'll do it the way that we want to do it in the first place.
It doesn't need to be professional.
No. Yeah, it's perfect.
Hey, as long as we're having fun with it.
Absolutely. We are. All right. I think we're done. We've got two sessions. We'll edit those together, and now we've had this happen to us once. So when it happens again in the future, it'll be cakewalk. That being said, my phone still says no service. I don't know what happened here. We lost AT&T.
Oh boy!
All right, everybody. Well, thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next time.
If you like this show, take a look at our other shows made for makers just like you at www.makery.network.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.